Well, before we begin the regular part of our council meeting, I'd like to mention that we've got some interns and mentors with us today. And like many other major employees, the city of Portland is being hit hard by retirement. And as part of the succession planning effort, the city of Portland Office of Management and Finance is hosting job shadows today for 14 graduate students from all over the country who are attending PSU's Hatfield School of Government summer programs. The students participated in one five-week-long academic program this summer, including Oregon Performance Institute, e-government, public sector financial management, sustainability, or Generation Next. The students are also completing a 10-week internship at public agencies throughout the Portland area. Could you folks please stand so we could recognize you? Thank you. Welcome to Portland. We hope you enjoy your stay.
And Mayor, before we start, could I have one personal privilege?
Certainly.
I forgot this morning when we were working on the recycling to thank my staff person, Angie Harris, who doesn't get thanked enough and worked her tail off on the recycling thing. And so I wanted to thank her for an item that happened
now?
This morning. No, but she's watching.
She's listening.
Yeah.
She's listening.
Good work, Angie, and I want to thank you for your hard work. Thank you, Mayor. I thank Commissioner Saltzman for his work, and this was more appropriate.
I understand, believe me.
Yeah.
City Council, come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams, Leonard, Saltzman,
here.
Sten,
here.
Potter,
here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Agenda item 921, adopt chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosive incident annex to the basic emergency operations plan.
Could the staff please come forward? And while they're coming forward, I'd like to make a few comments. The City of Portland has responsibility to its residents to be prepared to respond to any type of hazard that could impact the community. Part of the city's preparedness efforts is to be ready to respond to severe man-made accidents or terrorist events that could involve explosive chemicals or even radioactive materials. This October, the city will participate in the Federal Top Off Officials 4 exercise to test our ability to respond to such severe events. In preparation for Top Off and as part of the city's ongoing efforts to increase emergency preparedness, we will hear from the bureaus in charge of the development of the city's chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosive, or CBERN, incident plan. Patty Reuter from the Portland Office of Emergency Management, Assistant Chief. Well, actually, not Assistant Chief, right?
Captain.
Captain Keith Morris, Mayor.
Captain Keith Morris and Grant Coffey from the Fire Bureau. So with that, we'll lead off. Patty, are you going to lead it off?
Yes. Thank you. Patty Reuter, Portland Office of Emergency Management, Planning Manager. The CBERN plan outlines the roles and responsibilities of our bureaus and our partners in the event of a terrorist attack using any of the CBERN methods. It states that the public officials and bureau leaders would need to decide and immediate actions that would need to be implemented. It defines our partners' responsibilities, such as Multnomah County Public Health and the FBI. This plan will be tested in October, as the mayor said, with top officials for exercise. We will be testing the city's response to a simulated radiological dispersal device. The test will allow us to improve the plan and in so doing be more prepared for any type of disaster that might occur here. In a suspected terrorist event, such as a radiological dispersal device, the mayor will meet with his advisors from the key response bureaus, the city attorney, auditor, and the president of the council. They will confer about the safety of the citizens and the employees, the major immediate decisions, and the long-term impacts. The mayor will most likely declare a state of emergency, and therefore the EOC will be activated to call in more resources from neighboring counties and the state. Upon declaration, the mayor has the authority to call for an evacuation, to call for a curfew, to keep people out of an area. The mayor will need to collaborate with the county chair, with key business owners in the impacted area, and with the bureau heads and council members to assure that all avenues are being taken to secure the scene and safety of the citizens. Public information messages will come from the EOC so that everyone is talking the same language and giving the same information. In any event, we want the public to get the same information and make sure they know what is expected of them. We will rely on our city leaders to help with the communities they most often are in contact with. Emergency management is about relationships. Our preparedness for disaster has developed strong partnerships and a greater understanding of all that it takes to operate a city and region. We know that everyone has their part to play and their own interests to protect. One of the jobs of the Portland Office of Emergency Management is to facilitate relationship building and coordinate plan writing. Key to this plan were the Police Bureau and Portland Fire. And today, speaking on the behalf of Police and Fire is Captain Keith Morris and Hazmat Coordinator Grant Coffey. I'd like to turn it over right now to Grant, who will discuss the Hazmat process and response.
First, Mayor and Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I represent our Hazmat team, which is one of 15 state Hazmat teams situated in Southeast Portland. For quite some time, we've been anticipating and preparing for all hazards approaches to all events, either man-made, natural, or terrorism. As part of the Seaburn plan, we've been undertaking for several years now training, the acquisition of equipments through various federal programs, state programs, UASI, MMRS, various different acronyms that represent the acquisition of equipment through monies from outside the local area. And I'm happy to say that compared to years ago, we have more equipment than we've ever had. But along with that equipment comes the responsibility and the mandate to train to that level to be able to use the equipment to protect the public. As part of that, we're constantly training as part of the Seaburn plan. The big issue with an incident of this type is the magnitude of the incident. And so this plan encompasses assets that not only come locally, but they're outside the state. So part of my mandate and some of the chiefs in the back of the room that are here today from Portland Fire is to make sure that we are training with these outside agencies constantly. They include EPA, DEQ, State RAD Protective Services, emergency management from the state, police, EMS, and various other outside federal assets that would come in, including FBI. And I believe, compared to several years ago, we've made tremendous strides. We are one of the better equipped first responder agencies, not only in this nation, but in the other places I've been around the world. Do we have work to do? You better believe it. It's very difficult to be prepared for an event that, quite frankly, is beyond your imagination for the size, complexity, and amount of potential injuries to our citizens. Our mandate is to protect lives of the citizens of Portland. And to that end, we have made great strides towards training and the equipment that I've just mentioned. And I guess beyond that, if there's any specific questions, I'll deal with those. Just a few comments, though, with respect to T4. Top Off 4 is an exercise to test the ability and the coordination of top officials, obviously the name, post 911. But we're the people on the street, fire, police, EMS, that form that foundation that you then can operate on. So you have to trust our ability and know that we are prepared and that we're constantly out there dealing with the best equipment, the best training, and the best people. So I would say that some of our first mandates are to get to the most critically injured patients and get them out of there to care at a hospital the quickest possible while protecting our people. And then if this escalates, as it may, downwind, it then becomes decisions incumbent upon you as leaders of this city to decide how do we protect the numbers of people downwind. And you could be talking a 250,000 people very easily. So those decisions are that you have to make are based on equipment that we use in training. And if you have any specific questions about those, I can deal with an answer how we get that information, who we turn to, how quickly we get that information, and what devices, training, agencies we would work with to get you the best information you can to protect people and the largest numbers possible in a terrorist incident.
Good, Mayor and Commissioners. Again, I'm Captain Keith Morris, Portland Police Bureau, and I want to talk a little bit about the Police Bureau's response to a Seaburn incident. The police bureau have kind of a specific role in a Seaburn incident in the event of a terrorism act, and that is to investigate the scene. With fire, we'll be first responders. They will take primary responsibility for the hazardous materials concerns. We will work with mutual aid partners. This will overwhelm our ability to respond if it's a large-scale critical incident, as we're talking about in the top-off exercise. We will take immediate action to address life safety issues along with the fire bureau. And we are prepared. We have among the best, I don't mind saying the best, explosives disposals unit in the nation. Tremendous resources through our MEDU. We have Representative Sergeant Mike Marshman from that unit here today that can answer any specific technical questions you may have as far as their abilities to respond to a Seaburn incident. And as has been mentioned before, this plan will be exercised during the top-off exercise, which is an RDD event with large-scale implications. I'm going to spend a moment to talk about kind of the specific police response to a Seaburn incident. One of our primary functions in this in a situation like this is to gather intelligence and information that can be passed on to decision makers through our process of police command and the city's EOC, including Multnomah County and up to the state of Oregon, so that you can request the necessary federal resources to address the incident. One of the key decisions that will have to be made early on and will be need to be made by the commissioners and you, Mayor, is whether or not to evacuate or shelter in place. It's a primary concern. A key responsibility of all responders is to have solid command and control. We established command and control through the ICS format, the Incident Command System. The Police Bureau is now internalizing that process in everything that we do, and it will be implemented during the top-off exercise. Another key issue is interoperable communications. This comes up with every emergency management response. We're currently working on enhancing our communications capability to have redundant communications and ensure that we can talk to all of our mutual aid partners. And as I mentioned before, the criminal investigation is going to be critical. We could be looking at a mass homicide situation, large-scale criminal act, much like 9/11. In that case, it will take extensive investigative resources to gather evidence and interview suspects and follow up on that investigation. And lastly, we'll support the JIC, the Joint Information Center, with our resources so that we make sure there is a common message and that the right information gets out to the public so they can respond appropriately to whatever threat that we face. Additional responsibilities the Police Bureau may have in a Seaburn event are possible isolation and quarantine, depending on the nature of the threat. Again, we talked about evacuation and sheltering, and if we deal with a biological threat, we may have to support pod sites, points of distribution for medical support. So in conclusion, I just want to say that this plan is consistent with other emergency management plans within the city of Portland. We are prepared as a city and as a police agency to respond to any Seaburn event that we may face, and that we will effectively exercise this plan during top-off and then improve our abilities after looking at gaps as a result of that exercise.
Any questions?
So just for those listening, Dan's mom, my former boss, what we get out of top-off, at the end of top-off, is... What will we have gained from going through the top-off exercise?
I can address that from the Police Bureau's perspective. One of the things that I've learned, and I have been an operational person most of my career, is that there's tremendous value in process. Just going through the planning and preparation for this top-off exercise has required us to establish communication networks with various stakeholders that will be involved in a critical incident. So that in and of itself has value. And I think for us in the Portland Police Bureau, we'll be able to find out as a result of the top-off exercise our gaps. Where are our weaknesses? Where did we fail, and where do we need to improve our ability to respond to an RDD type event? It's going to be an excellent test for us to see what our capabilities truly are.
And is that through the top-off event, is that include our, if the scenario is that it's not shelter in place or it's a combination of shelter in place and evacuation, would we actually have to have prepared for top-off and practice during top-off an evacuation scenario for all or a portion of the city?
What I can suggest to you, Commissioner, is that it would be very difficult to actually implement an evacuation procedure in any large scale. And I'm part of the planning team, and I don't want to give up too much of this exercise for those that will be playing, but there will be significant tabletop exercises that will take place that will address those specific issues on how would we engage in either evacuation or sheltering in place, and what are the implications to the city, both in the short and the longer term?
The what he's referring to is that the folks who are planning the event will not be players.
Got it.
So information about some of the specifics they can't give out because the players aren't to know that information before the event.
Fair enough.
A tabletop is a discussion, so everything is simulated. We won't be moving people,
right. That's probably a good disclaimer to emphasize. This is a simulation. My last question was, I know the mayor has done a lot of work on this, as has Commissioner Leonard, the interoperability of our communication systems. You said that they've gotten better, but we have a ways to go. Can you give us sort of more detail on exactly what is the status of our interoperability?
I can address that, and then certainly would ask for additional support from my partners here. We have very good interoperable communications within our community. Where we run into problems is when we deal with our regional partners, some of whom are still not on the 800 megahertz system, which is our baseline of communication on the emergency response side. We also are looking at redundant communication systems because if our 800 system goes down, we need to look at their alternatives. We currently have satellite capability. We have two-way walkie-talkie shortwave capability. We have some shortwave ham radio type operations. In fact, the Fire Bureau has that capability. So we're looking at a variety of communications technologies, including cell phones, of course, that that we can go to in the event that any one method is not available during a critical incident. There's some work that needs to be done there. What my experience has been that because of the variety of technologies that are out there, they're not all compatible. And that's where we seek some of these grant funds to try to fill those gaps and make sure that we can communicate with all of our mutual aid partners.
So as a percentage, if 100% was total interoperability, where are we regionally with interoperability? What percentage would you say is interoperable of the total system?
And again, I have some difficulty there only because we're 100% operable now so long as all of our systems are working properly. But if a system should go down, then we run into some difficulty. When we talk about some of the smaller agencies, Scappoose, St. Helens, some of the smaller outliers, again, they're not necessarily on the 800 megahertz system. So I would say that with our regional partners, and I'm speculating here, but probably 80 to 90% are currently interoperable in all capacities, assuming everything is working at 100%.
Within a given emergency scene, at that scene, within the disciplines that are working there, and there may be three or four in the Unified Command System under NIMS, there's generally not going to be a problem at that level. In fact, if, in fact, the very few radios or communication equipment that isn't compatible, we have equipment that we have that we can actually tie those in together, and we are practicing those. We have a mobile command center that we work on not only for on-scene interoperability of the equipment that normally isn't compatible, but that can also function as a temporary way to dispatch if the infrastructure fails. As part of the problem with one of the big events, which not only includes terrorism, because remember, we're an all-hazards approach agency. We have to think about the worst, and we have to think about everything. Subduction earthquake would be a good example of a regional issue. If you I'm sure, have been involved in situations in the past where just a snowstorm, a rush hour snowstorm, can paralyze a cell phone system very quickly. And if you rely on that as your primary means of communication, then you're relying on something that when it fails, if you don't have a backup, you're in trouble. So we practice not only backups with our radios for, like, as Keith said, walkie-talkies, in essence, simplex, where you can talk to one another. One of the strongest legs in that area is the band that hams operate under. They're always listening. They always know what to do. They're emergency-based. They're very, very good at what they do. And then we operate as a relay system. Redundancy is incredibly important. So we're constantly working on the plan. And again, I wouldn't give a percentage either. We're a lot farther ahead than we used to be. We have more to do, but I would say this. Top off not only what are we going to learn afterwards, but what it does is it imposes a time frame or a high bar with a deadline to say you better do some things that maybe you could have done faster before, but you better get it done by then. Will we be as ready as I want to be? I don't think we'd ever be there. You're always improving. The point is we have a deadline now, and it pushes us to get things done that we should have gotten done before. And so I believe that having that deadline just gives us a better way of training quicker and working those things out, because we know it's going to be on an international spotlight to the city of Portland. And I guess we look at it this way. We're not going to fail. Winning is the only way we're going to do so. We're getting prepared for that goal.
Great attitude. Thanks.
And one of the parts of interoperability is not only the equipment used, but what information is passed, and where is it passed to, and who needs the information. And we're working on that, too, so that all aspects of our community, from the citizens to the special needs populations to the officers on the street to the public officials, all are getting information that they need from the proper resource, so that we are working in concert. And that's one of our key objectives also.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, folks. I really appreciate the work you've done on this. You've come a long ways, and I, too, am interested to see what we can learn from Top Off 4, but also how we can increase our partnership and interaction with within the region, because when it does happen, we're going to need everybody we can. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor.
Can you give us those dates again for the Top Off?
15th to the 24th of October, but actually the cyber starts earlier than that, so we'll be having a lot of fun.
You people in Poland are interesting.
Yeah. That's right. Sense of humor.
Good sense of humor. Okay, is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on this matter? It's a resolution. Call for a vote.
Adams?
Thank you for your great work on this. I know it takes a lot of effort, so really appreciate it. Thanks. Aye.
Leonard?
It does, and these kinds of documents and the work that goes into them and the training, as all the firefighters and police officers know, is how you become proficient, and in the time that you need to use this stuff, it becomes second nature. So I greatly appreciate the work that's gone into this. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, and appreciate the attitude that we will make this Top Off a success, this exercise, very important exercise. Aye.
Stan.
I would just agree. I'm not surprised, but I am very pleased with the quality of this work, and I look forward to the next steps. Aye.
Potter.
And, of course, as Top Off approaches, we will be having more of these discussions with council, and talking about the Disaster Policy Council, for instance, and its role. So this is really, this and the evacuation plan we brought before council recently, I think will be the backbone for the exercise. And we're looking forward to exercising our abilities and to ensure that we are as prepared as we can be. A lot of folks think in terms of terrorist events, and yet in the city of Portland, we have literally thousands of hazardous shipments that go through Portland on trucks and on trains every month, and that most people don't give that a second thought. But when one of those trains or a truck were to tip over near a major urban population, we would have to respond very, very quickly and rely upon our police and fire to ensure the safety of all of our citizens. So I really appreciate the cooperation between police and fire and POEM, and look forward to further working together. Aye. Please read the 2:30 time certain.
Item 922, Wildfire Risk Reduction Project.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. The Wildfire Risk Reduction Project, which is introduced by my office because we manage the grant, Bureau of Environmental Services manages a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency via the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, but is actually a partnership between the Portland Parks and Recreation, the Portland Fire and Rescue, the Portland Office of Emergency Management, and the Bureau of Environmental Services. The grant extends through March of 2009, and with hot weather on us, we thought it was a good time to get a check-in on our efforts to reduce the possibility of wildfires due to fuel, with efforts that include fuel reduction projects. And the focus of this particular grant is around Willamette Bluffs, Powell Butte, and Forest Park. It's my pleasure to introduce, who's going to talk? You're going to talk?
I'm going to talk.
Okay.
Chris Barney.
You're not Mark Wilson at all. Is Mark Wilson here? Please have a seat. We're going to hear from some good people from Fire and Parks and others about our multi-bureau efforts at reducing the risk of wildfires in Portland.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. Mayor Potter, commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Mark Wilson. I'm a staff ecologist with City Nature Division of Portland Parks. Before I go any further, I guess I'd like to introduce my colleagues, Chris Barney and Lynn Barlow.
Environmental Services.
Chris Barney, of course, is Fire Operations. 2.5 years ago, three city bureaus, Parks, Environmental Services, and Fire and Rescue, in cooperation with City Planning and Development Services, State of Oregon Emergency Management, and the Portland Office of Emergency Management, submitted a 3-year, $940,000 FEMA grant application to reduce hazardous wildfire conditions in three Portland focus areas: the Willamette Escarpment, which is composed of the Mox Crest and Oaks Bottom Bluffs, Powell Butte Nature Park, and Forest Park. A little over 1 year ago, the grant was approved and received by City Council. Today, the project management team is here to give you a project update. I'd like to start out by introducing you to the team. Lynn Barlow, who I just introduced, and Andy Gresh, who can't be here this afternoon, represent Environmental Services. Mike Alderman, Chris Barney, and Richard Haney represent Fire and Rescue. And Gay Greger, Fred Nilsson, and I represent Parks. Chris Barney will now present a short project update PowerPoint. Following that, the team can answer your questions.
My name is Chris Barney. I'm with Portland Fire and the Operations Division. And I'm going to have to apologize one sec. In preparing for this presentation, we had some problems with your computer. And so I'm adjusting mine now to make sure it runs well with you. So if you give me one sec, it wasn't quite ready when we started. We need to. Chief Rousseau is a computer expert, so. Well. Let's see. Okay. Great. Looks. I think we're ready now. Appreciate your patience. Again, thank you for your time today. My name is Chris Barney, and we wanted to come to you today for several reasons, one of which is that it's been a while since you've heard from us, and if you remembered our project or not, we wanted to remind you, take this opportunity to remind you about what's going on. We're about halfway through, and so we figured this would be a good point. Today, in our project, we're going to be going over the project in depth since it's been a while. We're going to look at we're going to talk about the three project sites in general terms, but then look at Powell Butte in specific and talk about the whole process and that we've developed to come up with results in just this one site as an example. And then we're going to finish out our discussion today with a look at some ideas for the long term of this project that we're facing right now, even though we're only about halfway through our allotted time and grant. So in 2006, you all accepted the FEMA money and the grant with the goal of reducing and managing the fuel loads in specific areas of our Portland parks. The idea was to reduce those fuel loads and thereby also managing the fire resilience to improve the ecological health of our parks. The three areas are the Willamette Escarpment, Powell Butte, and Forest Park. And again, you can see that there's some difficulties with the computer, so the pictures aren't coming out quite as clear. In an effort to convey kind of the current problems that some of our parks face to not only officials but also the citizens who have been a very big part of this project, we created a animation here that we hope is going to run, and to kind of look at what is there and what our current situation and the fire potential it poses, and then what we hope to accomplish and how that would alter the fire conditions. So what you have is a very crowded park space, a lot of invasive species, dense underbrush, lots of plants growing through, and it creates a large fire potential for us that is very, very difficult for the Fire Bureau to handle and also quite unsafe for not only the people that may be using the park or live near it, but also for us in dealing with the situation. So in creating the desired future condition, we want to take away some of that vegetation, remove some of the invasive species, the non-native shrubs and the like, clear out some of the underbrush, and create a more open park-like stand so that we can get in there and fight what would become a much smaller fire, much more slow-moving, controlled fire that would move through at a pace that would be the Fire Bureau would be able to handle in a much easier and safer fashion. So this is one of the tools that we've been using to communicate this animation here to the public about the issues that we're facing in Portland parks. So while all of us understand that Oregon is unique in many ways, one of which is for the rain we receive, we don't often see the large fires that are on TV. We don't often see those in Portland. The California fires that are popularized by the news, but we do have the potential. There is the fuel loading in Portland parks that is experienced in other areas of the country. We do enjoy the weather in the summer that makes it hot and dry. And we do have the interesting topography. This is a picture of Rocky Butte along with, you know, some of the ideas Forest Park, Powell Butte, they all create definite topography issues for us. In 1951, Forest Park had a stand-replacing fire, and that was the third such stand-replacing fire in the park's history. And that's a fire where a crown fire that moves through the trees and decimates that vegetation area to the point where it's completely removed, completely gone. That's in, like I said, that was the third one at Forest Park. So there's always the potential for in Forest Park. You all may be familiar with the Bluff fire that happened several years ago. Well, we had a fire just a couple weeks ago, very similar to that. And the only reason why it didn't take off and progress as fast as the Bluff fire years ago was some of the work actually we've been doing in our project. It happened, Federal Express truck crashed off of Greeley, ignited the hillside, and it just happened to be in an area where we had been working, so it really minimized the fire potential and the fire spread that could have occurred if we had not been working in that area. So you can see that this is a timeline of the project, where the bar in the middle indicates where we are. The Willamette Escarpment project is well into the implementation phase. Powell Butte has just begun, and Forest Park is kind of the granddaddy of the three projects that's coming up, and we're just beginning that process. Some of the accomplishments we've made with the Willamette Escarpment is some prescribed burns in the Oaks Bottom area. We've been doing, like I said, a lot of invasive vegetation removal along the Willamette Bluff and some reseeding projects, and one of the exciting things with the Willamette Bluff area is that we've actually signed on a lot of private citizens who are interested in having the city come in and work on their private land to incorporate their land with the public land, so we all are on the same page as far as reducing the wildfire potential. I'm going to talk about Powell Butte in a sec, so we'll move on then to Forest Park. this is going to be the big daddy of the projects. It's significantly larger. It's got many more surrounding neighborhoods to it. It's got a much wider range of project stakeholders. It's really a regional hub for this area as far as recreation. There are not just people from Portland who hold this park very dearly, so I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people very interested in it, and much more increased media attention because it is the crown jewel of our city's parks. So for all those reasons, when we begin our work on Forest Park, your offices may be hearing from not just us, but our citizens as well. So let's talk about the process and what we've kind of worked on in Powell Butte. From the very beginning, we wanted to make sure that this was a process that utilized technical expertise along with citizen input. That was very important to us because we may have a lot of ideas about what we want, but honestly, we're not the prime users of these sites. So it was important for us to bring in the community to get involved to let us know that their feelings on the site. Portland Fire, Parks, and Environmental Services were the overseeing agencies. And what we had then under us kind of really driving the project were three groups. One was a consultant that we hired to aid us in really pursuing our goals, and they had the expertise in forestry management. But the two main groups were the technical advisory group and the citizen advisory group. The technical group was made up of wildlife conservationists, forestry management people, wildland firefighters, and city firefighters. And the citizen advisory group was made up of neighborhood association members, NET team members, business contacts, and other community assets. So we really tried to make sure we are a well-rounded group representing everyone in the area. So when we looked at each site, the process began with the entire group, the citizens, the technical advisors, and the project management team visiting the site with the consultants, touring, walking around, discussing what we've seen, and really getting a good understanding of that area as a group. We then get back together, talk about that site, and really kind of record that information. We then would move on and really look at the site and its fire history, its weather, its topography, the different fuel types that are there, and what fires have happened in that area in the past so that we can understand and what we're preparing for. At that point, we began to look into the future. What do we want the site to be? What's our ultimate goal? Reducing the wildfire threat. How do we want to achieve that so in 50 years we've created a space that is still enjoyable for everybody while accomplishing these goals? And then from those, the desired future condition that we created, we developed projects that should be accomplished at each site to achieve that goal and then prioritize them so to really get at the fire issues that are there on the site. We did have, like I said, the community advisory group, but beyond that tight group of people that have worked on us, we felt it was very important to keep up the information flow between our group and the community at large. So we've utilized several methods with that. Our website at portlandonline.com/wildfire has always been updated at all the steps to keep the information flow going out to the citizens who are interested in this project. We've had several opportunities with various news media to publicize the project and make sure the information is being relayed. We visited several communities in their open houses. We've been to every neighborhood in their association meetings to discuss what's going on and get feedback from them. And we're also signage and brochures to within the site is very important to us to get those users who just come from maybe outside our city who are using. So in that way, we've really made a point of getting at the public beyond our group. So we had a current condition at Powell Butte, which was lots of areas of different vegetation, a lot of invasive species that occupy some of the grassland areas. And we created a long-term goal of a more savanna edge to the inside grass area that would prevent any wildfire coming across the grassland to immediately going right into the trees. We wanted to plant in there some deciduous trees that would really impede fire that would then move up through the ladder fuels and into the larger trees. So we wanted to create that long-term goal of something that it was much more preventative so that we didn't have to then just be reactive when some incident came up. We developed this project area map discussing and identifying a lot of projects within the park and prioritizing them about what needed to be done to achieve that ultimate goal of mitigating the wildfire issues in these parks, and have begun implementation at Powell Butte as well as the Willamette Bluff areas. So to finish off, I want to address just a couple long-term issues that we've examined and we're looking at now, even though our grant is still has a couple years left in it. One is that we've really realized that the grant monies we did receive from FEMA have been utilized to create a long-term plan. They have not been able to utilize to complete all the work for the project that needs to be done. So what we've done, we have, is an excellent document for us to work from, but we're going to look at and maybe discuss with you in the future about future grants from FEMA to continue the good work we've been doing and maybe look at some way of, over the long term, trying to incorporate the plan that we've created into a sustaining, you know, budget item or something with the city. It would be great, because we have this long-term plan, to incorporate it in all levels of city planning and ongoing city operations so that all bureaus pick up on it and, you know, work with it in where they can. One of the exciting things is altering the city codes that need to be adjusted to really incorporate these ideas. Title 33 has been a discussion point recently for us with the planning department, and they're very excited to try and incorporate some ideas from these defensible space and wildlife issues into altering that code. And the last point that we'd like to talk about is just if the success of this project is something that everyone is believes in, then we really could apply this project and its planning process to some other areas in the city if that's something that everyone agrees upon, such as the Markham Canyon area, Tourler green spaces, and various power line right-of-ways, which we see as pose a problem for wildfire threats. So at that time, I want to thank you for your patience, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to take them at this time.
So I am curious about the Title 33 discussions. I know from prior experiences, sometimes there can be conflict between urban planning and measures taken to create safe areas, especially where the interface occurs between wildland areas and urban areas. So how is that going?
Well, if I can transfer that question to the experts from the Fire Marshal's office behind me, they would be able to answer that best.
Richard?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Richard Haney from the Fire Marshal's office. Last night, I attended the planning meeting and submitted a code change request for that Title 33, specifically the 33.43 section on ecological zoning. Commissioner Leonard is correct in that it's a case where we have like intersecting interests between the bureaus and other partners. When it comes to environmental zoning, the purpose of that E-zone is to allow as much environmental function and natural plant life and wildlife corridors as possible, which is in conflict sometimes to fire safety and fire mitigation. We're in a very good space right now because, as they as Chris talked about, we have a technical advisory committee, and our FEMA grant committee has a broad base of membership across most of the bureaus in the city, and we have experts in the fields of horticulture, ecology, forestry, and so right now we also have membership from the planning department. So I believe that we will be able to come up with a workable solution where we can have some fire safety and mitigation fit well and dovetail into the environmental concerns. And I'm pretty excited that this will actually, we'll be able to come together and get on common grounds here.
If you could just keep me up to date on how that's going as we go through that process, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
Other questions? Thank you. Do we have anybody signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify on this matter? This is a report. We need a motion to accept and a second.
So moved.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank you and everyone involved with putting this wildfire risk reduction strategy together, and we're at the halfway point and a lot of important work left to go. Lynn, especially for my bureau, I want to thank you for representing the Bureau of Environmental Services. Thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
And this is one of those issues, again, that it doesn't rise up in people's awareness until something happens. So most people remember the Willamette Bluff fire and those kinds of incidents. But we actually, as an urban area, have one of the most potentially volatile mixtures of really dense urban life and wildland areas in the country, if not the world, which we enjoy and makes Portland Portland. I don't think people appreciate the potential that exists, which is why I raised the issue and the concern about the conflict between sometimes what planners would like to see and what we need to have to make sure people can survive a fire, and certainly their houses survive a fire as well. So this is very, very important work, and I appreciate it.
Saltzman.
Yes, it is very important work. I want to thank all the bureaus that are involved. I appreciate the extensive public outreach. That was very impressive, what you're doing. And I do think as wildfires become more prominent on our minds, particularly when we're watching TV newscast of places elsewhere, knock on wood so far, but it does, I think, point out the continued danger that we face in a city that has a very great natural surroundings. And the types of precautionary work, the types of foresight and proper planning, and making some tough decisions about land use and environmental zoning are things that we need to do so that we can hopefully avoid some of the tragedies that are occurring in other cities. So good work, and keep it up. Aye.
Stan.
Well, I agree, and I think this is it's unfortunately it's just a matter of when these places are going to catch fire, because it's inevitable, and hopefully we're out ahead of it. And I think we're doing a lot better. And actually, I do remember not so long ago I was involved in some conversations where the different bureaus weren't working as well together, not because anybody was wrong, but because there's different viewpoints and different values. And so I'm really, really pleased to see this. I think this is a great halfway point, but you're doing very good work. And we did have a small bluff fire this year, so it's something that is going to continue to happen, and we've got to be ready for it. And I feel a little bit better having heard the presentation today. Aye.
Potter.
Well, one of the interesting points is that some of the very things that make our city a beautiful city are our trees and gardens and park areas, and also they present one of the biggest hazards in terms of fires. So I really like the balance that you folks are taking, the approach on this, and that I feel it's the right approach. And anything that we can do as a council to make sure that you're successful in your efforts, we will be glad to do. So thank you very much for your efforts, and I vote aye. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Do we have the folks here for the 3 p.m. time certain on the request to change the comprehensive plan map? Pardon?
Yes, we are.
Okay, we're just a few minutes early, so I think we'll go ahead and have that heard.
Do you want to go ahead and read that? It is a land use case. Is it okay if we just start that?
I wouldn't object taking a 5-minute break.
We've had a request for a 5-minute break from one of the commissioners that's jumping up and down in his seat, so we'll be back in 5 minutes.
I'm jumping too hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. How can I reissue? It's nice and wide, 25 minutes. I'm very willing to support that.
I believe you'd be delighted. It's in your sense that you thought 17. You'd be delighted if you were from 17 to 25.
So. Yeah.
It wasn't a real surgical conversation. Shoot the breeze. And I said, well, you know, 2025.
I'd just like to get a little bit clearer message about how it's going to be used and if there's a special fund that goes in.